Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
This content is brought to you by Uphold, which is a great platform that makes crypto investing easy. You can buy, sell, trade, and earn cryptocurrencies on Uphold. They have 10 plus million users, over 200 plus cryptocurrencies, and they're available in 150 countries. I personally use this platform since 2017. They're one of my go-to exchanges. They also offer equities and precious metals that you can invest in. If you'd like to learn more about Uphold, please visit the link in the description. Welcome back to the Thinking Crypto Podcast, your home for cryptocurrency news and interviews. With me today is Greg Kidd, who's the co-founder of Hard Yakka and the co-founder and CEO of Global ID. Greg, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks. I can't believe it's been 2 years since we last chatted.
Yeah, it seems like it was just a year ago, but time flies and how things have changed since we last spoke. But I would love to start off with, you know, what are you currently working on and investing in? Are you still involved with crypto? You've obviously had a huge track record with different crypto companies and so forth.
We are still involved in crypto. There aren't a lot of new like layer one or layer two protocols right now. We're particularly involved in blockchain. We think there's some really interesting things going on in identity. Especially in the wake of Elon taking over Twitter and being more of a push for people to move to decentralization, not just of money, but of social media and of messaging platforms as well. So we're doubling down on credentials. We're really interested still in currency, including cryptocurrency, stable coins, and just new digital forms of other tokenized assets, including NFTs, commodities, etc. And we are really interested in what's going on and whether there will be a decentralized alternative to Facebook and Twitter in the world going forward and how we can participate in that.
Are there any companies that you can name drop? And I know maybe not, but you know, we got the metaverse NFTs, and like to your point, we need a decentralized social media. What are you looking at?
Well, the big thing for us, and it could just be sort of flavor of the month, but I think it's more than that, is in the wake of the Twitter and Facebook sort of centralization conundrum, there have been new platforms out there like Matrix, which can potentially be a interconnect between all the messaging platforms. There's been Mastodon, which is a more decentralized version of social media. But there's a new one called Noster, just started by some of the Bitcoin maximalists that came from Lightning to basically create a mix of fully decentralized with some subservers called relays that would allow people to control their identity for social media and messaging and take with them their followers wherever and be censorship resistant. And so that's not a company, it's a protocol. I think it's getting some uptake. There'll be a conference in Costa Rica, which I think Jack Dorsey is helping fund and support. But to us, it looks like the foundation for an alternative model to Facebook and Twitter. And we think that same model of identity could be used for DeFi to basically make a decentralized but compliant form of DeFi, non-custodial wallet. So that's what we're really excited about, is despite CeFi blowing up in 2022, we think DeFi is still a go, but it's going to need to be simpler to use so it can go mainstream, and it's going to need to be compliant. We think those milestones are achievable, and we're double down on making that happen.
And what's your like time horizon for that catalyst where you have that mainstream adoption? And is the catalyst that people recognize, hey, I can own my data and I can earn off of it, I can lend it out to this company or whatever it is, and through DeFi or whatever it may be?
Well, I'd always like to see it this year, but like if there was a version of like MetaMask that like everyday people could use and everyday merchants could take and accept as payment, you know, without you having to be like, you know, a crypto punk, then we would be on our way. Whether that actually happens in 2023 or we bleed into 2024, you know, that's what we think is the big sort of excitement this year, is now that we know that CeFi is kind of like, you know, has its limits, both from a regulatory point of view, a risk point of view, a fraud point of view. The question is DeFi and Web3 up to the task of filling in for the gap and carrying the torch forward? There's still some missing pieces, but we see those infrastructure processes working on making DeFi usable by everyday people and efficient and scalable as being the there for 2023 and beyond.
Mm. And do you envision, and I'm kind of getting to the weeds here, but do you envision that through a decentralized social network that our information will be on NFTs and then kind of in a way lend that NFT out to monetize it, you know, secondary markets with our data and so forth? Or am I dreaming too much here?
I just believe you ought to have an identity. And if you post something, that ought to be on posted to like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. And if you're messaging someone, you shouldn't have to worry about whether they're on WhatsApp or Telegram or WeChat. So, and then finally on money, if I need to send you value, I shouldn't have to worry about, well, do you have only accept wrapped Ethereum and I have the, like what, like it should just, everything should just be identity to identity. Mm-hmm. And whether you're moving money, social media, text messages, that should just be obscured in the background. And like currently right now, to make any of that happen, you have to be like a super geek. But when that gets like stripped down, so like people don't even know that they're using DeFi, they don't know that they're using a non-custodial wallet, when it's like PayPal dumbed down, but the rails underneath, that's like a different reality that we would be living in. And I think the people that are really working and building right now, as opposed to sitting around looking at the screens of like what the price of crypto is, that's the kind of stuff that they're working on. And there are people working on and doing that. And I think all the folks that were there just for like the, you know, for the party, you know, have been sort of smoked out in 2022 with the downdrafts on crypto prices and the blow up of some of the Web 2.0 and crypto 2.0 CeFi offerings.
Mm. For sure. Yeah. A lot of washing out last year. Yeah. So talking about on the topic of identity and, you know, maintaining your identity online, tell us about what's new with Global ID and what we can expect in 2023.
So Global ID is, you know, is at risk of being too much of a Web 2.0 company. And so what we've done is that Global ID should be a one platform amongst others, or sorry, one application amongst other, where you could go and collect your Easter egg of credentials for your identity. And so if it was just like Global ID, then you're just trapped in another silo. So we've separated out things like, well, if you're going to have a universal namespace, that shouldn't be controlled by any one company. And so Global ID would be a great way to go out and collect credentials to attach to a universal namespace. But the universal namespace has to go through the same process that DNS went through when it went from being centralized by a single company to being something that lots of different companies can use We all can have an identity. There isn't just one universal truth of identity. And so we're looking for sort of a DNS type rebirth of identity, and Global ID can't be, you know, the proprietary solution for that, because that just defeats the purpose. You're right back into a centralized, whether it's like names are being issued by Skype or Twitter or Global ID, it can't be by any of those. It's got to be neutral, and that name has got to be interoperable across, you know, across different use cases. And so there's a project called the Universal Namespace. And so anything that we're doing with names and pulled out of Global ID or any of our other investments, and we're turning that over to a group of people trying to make the issuance of names neutral and universal.
Remind me, Greg, are you guys using any specific blockchains or your own proprietary blockchain?
So it's kind of funny because we're, you know, obviously it was early in at Bitcoin, and you know, if we look at the store of value, I was chief risk officer for Ripple, and so been through the whole XRP saga. Mm-hmm. We were first money in at Solana because we thought it was fast and cheap. Not mentioned there is Ethereum, but Ethereum has kind of come back into our orbit because when we want to create a universal ledger, because we want that new token to have rules built into it so that it can only be used by folks that are KYC'd and compliant. Well, Ethereum is actually pretty good for building a smart contract right into the money to make it programmable, compliantly programmable. And so our latest efforts are actually built on permissioned versions of Ethereum. And so we're pretty well covered and experienced now in those four chains. And then there's, you know, new ones coming up that have their particular use cases, like whether it's like a, you know, Avalanche or like if I can explain in one sentence what that chain does, why it's a value proposition, we're probably involved in it. But right now we're putting more effort into like Ethereum than anything else, which is, you know, if anything, I was the latest to the party on Ethereum and it was earlier in on Bitcoin, Ripple, and Solana. Mm. So we still really like the Solana ecosystem because it's fast and cheap. We're seeing a lot of NFT activity on Solana. We are minting NFTs on Solana for names and stuff. So, you know, but we have our Bitcoin purposes and our XRP heritage. So, you know, that's our positioning in the market.
Yeah. And to your point of Ethereum, just a lot of great capabilities with the smart contract tech. A lot of other blockchains use the EVM.
Yep.
And are you, and on the note of Solana, are you concerned with, you know, kind of the downtimes they've had? And it seems a lot of interruptions of that blockchain.
Yeah. So for Solana, the great thing about it was fast and cheap. The terrible thing about it is it's fast and cheap. So if like you're a hacker and it's really cheap to like spam the Solana network. So the lack of congestion pricing on Solana, you know, something that had to be fixed. And so it's kind of like for a long time, there weren't any viruses on Apple iOS because like Microsoft was dominant and bad guys didn't spend any time on Apple. But when you get to be successful enough, you're going to attract problems and challenges. And so, you know, I have a lot of trust in the team at Anatoly and whatnot that they'll be able to like dig their way out. I also see that the GitHub commits and et cetera, whatnot, like Solana is really still attracting a huge amount of developer interest. And my big question always is like, what do developers like to work on? And that developer community still seems very committed and enthusiastic about Solana, but mm-hmm. you know, they definitely have their growing pains.
For sure. Yeah. You know, we're still in the early phases of many of these blockchains, and to your point, there'll have to be multiple iterations to fix things. And but as long as there's a dev community there working on it, it's, you know, you could be optimistic about the outlook. So I would love to get your thoughts on, you know, some of the things that happened last year. And you know, we kind of touched on a high level, but from a deeper perspective, you know, what are your thoughts on the FTX collapse and what Sam Bankman-Fried did? Obviously, a lot of it was old-fashioned fraud, a la Bernie Madoff and so forth. You know, what are your thoughts on that and the impact on the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I was as taken in as anybody. We actually went to Bahamas to get regulated for some of our entities because FTX went there. And like we said, well, if FTX is gone there, it must be a good place to go. We're assuming their due diligence was good, so we don't have to do as much due diligence. And so we're not lenders or borrowers, so we didn't get caught in the downdrafts of FTX as much, or Celsius or BlockFi or, you know, or even Genesis and whatnot. Like, so we're sort of on the sidelines. We get caught in the downdrafts of what happens to the asset prices as they're being sold by these distressed entities. But obviously FTX was a shambles of confidence for the industry. Not so much for DeFi, but even DeFi projects there like Serum and whatnot got caught up in the downdrafts. And, you know, it gave sort of like some people in the public policy arena just a chance to say, see, we shouldn't allow crypto. Or the interesting thing that came out of it is the lesson you learn from FTX is that we should just ban crypto, or should we like regulate it? And still, there doesn't seem to be much of an awareness that crypto didn't blow up. CeFi institutions blew up, and that the, you know, the reason they blew up was just old fashioned leverage and old fashioned fraud. And you know, you could debate. I tend to think that Sam may actually believe his own bullshit and stuff, and because he's so convincing to himself that like it's hard to believe that there's not some. I don't want to call it mental illness, but I think I'll call it mental illness that to some extent, I think he actually, you know, believes himself, which is, you know, a little sad, but, you know, now it's in the courts, but in its wake is just a tremendous amount of collateral damage because a lot of valid projects, you know, did take money from FTX, but, you know, at the time, nobody knew that this Robin Hood was actually, you know, not stealing from the rich to give to the poor. He was stealing from everyone to give to everyone. And so it's a weird kind of conundrum. And it just takes time for that to wash out. I don't know who else is left to go bankrupt, like, because nobody else had like leverage and cross dependencies in the market. So hopefully we've kind of flushed through all the parties that were vulnerable to other counterparties that got overextended or got sucked up in Sam's games.
Yeah. And I just recently spoke to some folks at the Blockchain Association, and, you know, they're saying in DC, you know, a lot of folks are left a sour taste in their mouth and they don't even want to talk about crypto. It's lower on their priority list now. So it's a lot of credibility that we have to rebuild in DC with regulators, politicians, and so forth.
It may, but you know, the rest of the world is going to move on. And what the US has to just make a decision is, do we just want to like, you know, take a halt, you know, take a pass for a while and let everybody else, you know, everybody else move. Like in China now, even in Hong Kong, they're starting to license crypto again. And so China was like burned it all to the ground. And now we see that like is an area of rebirth. So, you know, these cycles go through, you know, at the end of the day, you're either going to have to ban it or regulate it, or maybe you can just ignore it. But, you know, you got to pick one of those three boxes. We know what the SEC is doing. The SEC is just using it as excuse to like shake down various companies. They're not pointing to like, well, this is how you do it the right way. Mm. And here's a poster child company that's doing it the right way. They're just taking a notch out of one company after another. And you just, you know, that knock is going to come on the door when you're big enough for the, you know, for the collection man to come by and say, you're going to have to pay your fine. Like Khashoggi, when he went to visit the Turkish embassy to get his marriage license and he didn't come out. I don't know anyone who's gone in to see the SEC and come out the other side with all their limbs attached.
Mm. Well,
and yet there's no playbook for how to do it the right way.
Right. But the funny thing is, Greg, Chairman Gensler would go around saying, come in and talk to us. Well, Sam Bankman-Fried, I spoke to multiple people in DC. He was walking the halls around there. He went in and met with the SEC, even the CFTC. They didn't do their due diligence, it seems like. And it seems like they were working on some sort of regulation where FTX would have the monopoly. Now, there's been like, you know, memos and things leaked from the SEC, but not fully confirmed. But I mean, it's like, wow, it paid to play.
Well, we were playing checkers. Sam was playing chess, although it comes sort of delusional chess. But Sam, like, he bought a company. I was an early founder, LedgerX. LedgerX already had, you know, licenses like to do crypto derivatives. And so, like, he was building a fortress by getting in good where you could get licenses, or he bought, did an investment in Moonstone Bank. There's an article this week in Wall Street Journal to figure out how to pay interest on crypto without being declared a security, the thing that, like, you know, BlockFi ran up against. And so, you know, it all came down as a house of cards, but Sam was clearly looking to collect all the regulatory licensing assets he could and build a moat around what he was doing. And, you know, and that kind of burned, you know, burned CZ up over at Binance, who's like, you know, like, you know, he's not, he wasn't getting his dance card punched the way Sam was. Right. So,
Do you think we have 2022 was the end of CeFi lending and borrowing, and that?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the end of like CeFi lending and borrowing with unperfected collateralization. Mm. Like, you know, you can say it's collateralized, but if, you know, you can't get it till Monday and it's Friday and there's a problem, you know, that's sort of an imperfect collateralization. Now, one thing that did work in the meltdown was DeFi collateralization. And, you know, the special deal that Sam cut for Alameda is like, he didn't force liquidations when their positions were underwater. And that's how he got deeper and deeper in. Had that been actually properly collateralized and enforced the way he enforced it on others, you know, they would have taken a hit, but they wouldn't have been burned to the ground. And so, you know, Sam did himself a disservice by not working with perfected collateralization. We think that there could be responsible, you know, lending and borrowing. And like, you know, Coinbase will let you like earn a return on some things, and then you can borrow on some things, but, you know, they're perfecting the collateralization. It's still not DeFi, but there's something between like the Wild West and automated liquidations in DeFi. And it's called responsible borrowing and lending, but it sure has taken a, you know, a huge hit in 2022, and the kind of leverage ratios you're going to get. I mean, I think those are a thing of the past, but, you know, this is not new. This has happened before, not with crypto. It happened with mortgage-backed securities. It happened in the dot-com crash. It's happened with, like, you know, buying government debt from like Russia or Mexico. We've seen these things where the ratios get out of whack and people get exuberant.
Well, I guess one thing too, the silver lining to the collapse, if you want to call it that, was that we saw a lot of exchanges kind of raise the standard, proof of reserves, Merkle tree audits, and things like that. So one will think, why wasn't that in place right in the beginning? But I guess you live and you learn. And then, you know, what are your thoughts
Party
on that?
Party on, man. Party on.
And then maybe
pretty good reserves, but proof of reserves, you know.
Yeah. I feel so like
we're not at the point yet. And I don't know why proof of reserves. I mean, it seems obvious to me that, like, you ought to be able to prove your reserves. And I know people have come up with all sorts of excuses, whether it's Tether or Binance, like it's privacy secure. It's like, come on, guys, this we live in the world of zero knowledge proofs. You ought to be able to prove you either got the money or you don't. And if, you know, the money is in this form versus that form, you know, you ought to be able to prove it. If Craig Wright thinks he's Satoshi, he just needs to sign a transaction. It's like, we're not living in a world where it's impossible to prove that you are or aren't in possession of a certain asset.
For sure. On a note of Tether, you know, this thing keeps lingering. Do you think it's still a threat, you know, of collapse and effect on the markets, given that they still are under scrutiny of?
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Show us the full reserves and what you're doing and so forth and what's backing the stablecoin.
Yeah, it's always a crapshoot as to, like, you know, I remember when Tether got into trouble before and they like double used the funds and like 800 or 900 million disappeared. And I was like, I was sure Tether would collapse then. But people are like, no, it's so useful for getting moving money around, especially like getting money out of China. Mm-hmm. We don't really care that it's not fully collateralized. As long as the clock doesn't stop when it's my turn with a hot potato, then we'll keep going. And so there's such a desire for Tether to simply succeed because it's so useful to a bunch of people that want to move a US dollar equivalent without necessarily the scrutiny of the banking system. But there's a lot of tailwinds for Tether, and a lot of sins are covered up in that tailwind. And so it has given them time to, you know, collect more, you know, more funds. But I will say that when, you know, FTX got in trouble, there was one bank that was bailed out in the Bahamas. And that was a bank that had exposure to FTX. It got topped up, and that bank was Deltek. And Deltek just happens to be the bank that also banks Tether. And so if Deltek went down, even though Tether had money, quote unquote, at a bank, you know, and Deltek went down and Deltek was their bank, that would have punched the hole in their balance sheet too. So everybody, even if they have like quote unquote banked money, depending on where that bank is and what regulatory regime it's under, you know, it's not 100% guaranteed. We aren't talking about FDIC guarantees here. We're talking about bank money, but it ain't the USA kind of bank money. It's just bank money. And not all banks in all countries are created equal.
And what we're seeing, and the conversation started last year, that stablecoin regulation is top of mind for many of the regulators and members of Congress. It seems like we would most likely get stablecoin regulations before we get comprehensive crypto regulations. And then there's also the regulated entity of Circle and their USDC, which is competing with Tether. You know, how do you see that dynamic playing out? Do you see USDC being a winner ultimately because of regulations coming in place and Tether still having its issues?
It's really unclear. I completely agree that stablecoin regulation is a thing of its own. Mm. But from my point of view, I don't see any consensus amongst policymakers as to like how they want to regulate stablecoins. Do they want stablecoins to be issued by banks or not? And if they are issued by banks, well, then who's going to regulate them? Well, banks have their own regulators, not the SEC. If you want stablecoins to be issued by money transmitters like Coinbase or you know, or like Tether, like that's not a bank. It's like it's a different set of regulators and, you know, a different set of issues. And so do you want stablecoins to be capital efficient or not? Well, if they're going to be one-to-one back, they're not going to be capital efficient. If they're issued by a bank, they're not actually a stablecoin. They're probably a deposit coin or a deposit token or tokenized deposits. And so, you know, we have not actually gotten to the point where, you know, even policymakers know what they want, right? And so it's just a mystery. Do you want to have stablecoins regulated one way if they're issued from the US and another way if they're issued overseas? And do you want a level playing field? Do you want to like make stablecoins something that's going to preempt central bank digital currency? It's just, if you let somebody be king for a day, they don't really know what to do with being king for a day. And so it could happen. I don't actually expect there to be clarity on stablecoins in 2023 because the policymakers and the regulators and the political people, they don't know what they want.
Yeah. And although we got the Republicans taking back the House, and I know there's the House Financial Committee there. It seems they want to do things, but still, you know, will they actually be able to?
But they don't know what they want to do. I mean, they and it's both parties. It's not one party or the other. Like, we know that people like, you know, Elizabeth Warren want to burn it all to the ground, but, you know, she doesn't have the votes to burn it to the ground, but she certainly can make a lot of noise.
And funny enough, she seems to be good pals with Chair Gensler.
But you know, burning it to the ground, and I don't think Gary wants to burn it totally to the ground because he's collecting fines, mm-hmm. and he just wants his pound of flesh. You know, they're not seeking clarity; they're seeking fealty, which is different from. It's not a policy framework. It's just, you know. We kind of think what you're doing is kind of dirty and we're not going to kill you, but we're going to make you pay essentially a tax. And how big the taxes you pay depends on how much money you have in your kitty. That is a fearsome kind of world, but there's no doubt that, you know, they have the finger with the ring, you know, and nobody else does. So
do we have to get to a point for that regulation by enforcement to stop where Congress acts? That's the block. Like, okay, here's the new rules and regulations.
Yeah, but as we have a divided Congress, and even if we didn't have a divided Congress, even within the Democratic and Republican Party, I don't see clarity as to like what they want to do. Like, again, even if they are king for a day, They don't know what they want to do. They don't know whether they want to just slow crypto down, stop it, regulate it, have it closer to the banking system so that banking type controls can be, you know, applied to it, or make it a money transmitter, make it a commodity. Like in physics, something is gas, liquid, or solid. Here, it's like all three things at once. It's like a sci-fi movie. And basically, we're just collateral damage to it's like drug lords battling over distribution space. And so between the bank regulators, the security regulators, the commodity regulators, and the IRS and the FDIC, I mean, it's just a collection of interests having a turf war, and innovation, consumers, you know, public confidence are just collateral damage along the way.
I want to get your thoughts on the SEC and CFTC seemingly backtracking on Ethereum being a commodity. And this is post-merge. Chair Gensler, for the most part, has not echoed the statements of his predecessors, Jay Clayton, Bill Hinman, and these guys who said Ethereum is not a security. He doesn't want to talk about it. He just talks about Bitcoin. And then Rostin Benham, chair of the CFTC, about maybe a couple of months ago, you know, also kind of backtrack saying Ethereum is not a commodity. What are your thoughts there and how they're doing this with Ethereum?
My thoughts are they care about who has the authority to get to say who has to do what. Mm-hmm. And so they're not talking about principles. There's no principle-based discussion about, you know, is Ethereum decentralized enough? Was it security? Those conversations are gone because those conversations are just too practical and clarifying. And we're not in a period where people are seeking clarity. Well, the regulators aren't. They're seeking, you know, obsequious compliance that they are in charge. And so if the rules, like we have this thing of, do we live in a nation of rules or a nation of men? They're definitely, well, we live in a nation of men and we are the men, and you are, you know, you're here to, you know, to bow down. And so there are no principles being expressed at this time as to like what these terms mean, what it would take to be And if you are a security, like, okay, so what disclosures do I need to do? What's the process for me being a proper security? And if I'm not going to be a security, what does it look like? What do I have to avoid? What is sufficient decentralization? What is, you know, if you're just going around saying, well, the Howey test from 1934, it's there, it's clear. And, you know, so if you can't figure out how to apply like the principles of fruit trees to your token offering, that's your problem, right? Like we did our job and we're just here to collect when you screw up. And that's, you know, frankly, that's how it feels. Like, I don't think there's a lot of people running around right now thinking about, oh, I'm going to launch a layer one protocol, because they feel like they're going to get the crap beat out of them.
Right. Yeah. A lot of folks contemplating leaving the US, many who are like in other countries that want to come to the US are like, no, we'd.
Yeah, but you can leave the US, but you know, these connecting flights and there's still this fear that you're going to get pulled off the plane. Like, just leaving the US, it's not enough. Everything flows through and touches dollars at some point, and Americans find their ways into this, and they've pretty much shown that like the long arm of their turf, you know, extends to every corner of the planet, and it's just a matter of time till they get to you. If you get big enough to show up on the radar screen, you're going to get a knock on the door.
Mm. I want to get your thoughts on the latest with the SEC Ripple lawsuit. Things have really escalated, progressed, whatever the terminology is around that. And there seems to be light at the end of the tunnel that we're going to see some sort of resolution this year. But also, there's a layer there with Bill Hinman and his emails and communications and potential violations of ethics as it relates to Ethereum. It seems that's hanging over the SEC. They don't want that information out there. And what do you think? What do you think about all this? And how do you see? What type of conclusion do you see for this situation?
I really don't know how to handicap that one. It was looking better for Ripple, and then FTX blew up, and just basically everybody's just sort of heaping abuse on the, you know, on the industry. And so once again, you know, Ripple and XRP gets sort of carried along with those wins. I don't know. I mean, I think the SEC made a fundamental, terrible mistake suing Ripple the way they did, but they're kind of committed to it, and they don't have, you know, a way of backing down, because it would like if you're the big bully, you know, you never can show weakness. And so it's tough. And you know, part of the problem for Ripple is if, like, you know, they find a friendly enough venue, the SEC, for these other cases where they get their pound of flesh from folks that don't have the resources to fight, it just sets it's a bunch of singles. It's not doubles, triples, or home runs. And the SEC just builds up this sort of like this casebook of preferences where folks that couldn't defend themselves capitulate, and they get those pieces of the precedent. And then they just say, see, like, we won in all these, you know, why shouldn't we win with Ripple? Regardless of all the stuff about Hinman and, you know, all that other stuff where they're like absolutely against transparency about what happened before. They're just like, it's just water under the bridge. You know, what matters now is like just establishing what the limits of our power are. And right now it looks pretty limitless.
Yeah. You know,
the only thing they're going to like give up is like, okay, we're going to give Bitcoin to the CFTC. Like, but we're not really ready to yield. And maybe we were going to give Ethereum, but we might want to have that one back. But currently, right now, the breadth of the net that they're throwing, which includes stable coins, virtually every other crypto than Bitcoin, is a huge, huge land grab. And, you know, it's like Democrat, Republican, like once you get into the, you know, one of these organizations, there are very few of these organizations that voluntarily give up scope of authority. And it's not like, you know, it's not like the OCC or the Fed have been like really trying to go out there and like grapple and take stuff from the SEC. And so, but you know, the CFTC, they're not like, they're not just like lying down on their back, but they're not picking a fight with the SEC, right?
Right.
So I don't know how the turf battle is going to turn out. And unfortunately, Ripple to me is just – they're just caught up in the mix. They have their own case, but this is bigger than Ripple. And Ripple knows it's bigger than Ripple. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a victory for Ripple would really be or set a new precedence for the crypto industry and other projects out there. I'm hoping, you know, they're victorious, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I don't know how to handicap that one.
Folks in the XRP community want me to ask you, are you still involved with Ripple in any way? Do you still hold XRP and things like that?
Well, all our crypto holdings are much, you know, are much skinny down. So we generally are not holders because we're always moving on to the new thing.
Sure.
So I don't mean like people ask me, well, do you still have Twitter stock and Square stock? Like I'm like, maybe, but I don't think so. Like right. There's probably some lying around somewhere. So we're simply investing and moving all of our assets into the next new thing. And so there was a criticism of the Web3 people, I think by Jack Dorsey and others, like Web 3.0, same as Web 2.0 people. And we are guilty as charged. We have moved our investments from, you know, the early pioneers in fintech, in just tech in general, and in crypto. And we're always on to the next new thing because, you know, we're here to learn and we're not investing other people's money. We're just doing it on our own. And so we get bored with the status quo and we try new things. And usually we make mistakes and get burned. And we just call that education.
Mm. I would love to get your thoughts on the big players that came into the market last year. Despite all the collapses and things we talked about, we had BlackRock, BNY, yep. Mellon, NASDAQ, many other big names, the credit card companies, MasterCard and so forth, enter the space. What do you think about that? Do you think that there's a changing of the guard? You know, these folks may now start to make a big push?
Well, we're big believers that all this stuff is going to go mainstream one day. And so, like, all of that to us is validating of our vision is whether those guys are drawn kicking and screaming, or they just like the water and they jump in, that everybody's going to get pregnant with the fact that there's technology out there that's like not centralized and that you can be able to participate in these things. And the model isn't like the Highlander model, one sword to rule them all. And so that's the order of the day. There was a day when like CompuServe and America Online were all powerful, and then they were on the internet and then they were no more. And so to us, this is the tale of history is, you know, like 10 years from now, I'm not sure that it's going to be Google and Apple. Like we might have different companies be the most valuable companies in the world. If I had a crystal ball, you know, I would be, you know, I would be living in crystal land. I don't know what the pace, what the order of that change is. But one thing I am sure of as a historian is that the status quo gets disrupted. And those folks entering is an indication that that is happening once more in history, even amidst the downdrafts and whatnot. Like even along .com meltdown, there were the Googles of the world being created, the eBays, the PayPals, they all came through it. They took a pounding, but they were part of the next generation of value builders in the world and disruptors.
Yeah, absolutely. Final question here for you. You know, where do you see NFTs and the metaverse in about like 5 years or so? And it's a hard question, but, you know, Facebook lost a lot of money on the metaverse, but I think Zuck is trying to be early, but he was really early. you know, how do you see us interacting with the metaverse and NFTs in five years or so?
Well, so to us, NFTs is just like a code word for a title registry for everything in the world. And so I wrote a paper like the registry of everything, like way back, like in the, like around 2000. And in that vision, it was a Star Trek world where everything had an identity. So you have people having an identity, groups having an identity or slash entities, And then there's things. And so if a thing doesn't have an identity, it's like, well, you know, how's it going to work in the digital world? So NFTs are just the perfection of a title registry. And, you know, our big question is, okay, you have the big registry, who signed, right? Like, so you have what everything is, you know, it's owned and it's owned by somebody. So whether it's like my bike and I'm selling the bike and trying to figure out whether it's a stolen bike, it either comes with a, you know, with a title or it doesn't. There's a scene in the James Bond movie, Casino Royale, where he gambles and somebody throws the keys for the Aston Martin on the table and James Bond wins the car and the girl that goes with the car. But what he should have thrown on the table was the title, right? Yeah. Like, because he's like, you know, running off with the keys, you don't have the title. The NFTs are that title. And so that ought to be incorporated into everything, whether it's physical goods or intellectual property rights, like creative goods. That's just the title registry. In terms of the metaverse, I'm kind of the metaverse, AI, like to me, we've been living in the metaverse for years already. It just isn't very great, good UI, UX. Somebody mentioned that. It's like we live in the metaverse already. It just kind of sucks. Mm. And so it will get better, just like AI keeps getting better. I think the concept that, like, whether it's virtual reality, AI, or, you know, or metaverse being some like sort of tipping point is the wrong way to think about it. It's just that digital in our world is becoming more immersive. We're becoming sort of taking it for granted. Like my kids, they've grown up with a bunch of things. Like they wouldn't understand like an analog phone. Like, wow, this is, you know.
Sure.
So I just view that process as inexorable and it's just happening. But if you over play it and make it like it's a thing in and of itself, like sort of like, you know, Mark has done with the, you know, with the metaverse type thing, you kind of get the cart in front of itself. And so virtual reality, metaverse, AI will be built into everything. I don't mean to downplay the significance of any of those things, but those are just long-standing trends. The discontinuities in the world are things like the invention of Bitcoin, the fact that you can have a financial system without a central authority. That's actually a new concept. So I have sympathy for the Bitcoin maximalists that see that. But everything else to me, even with chat, you know the chatbot, it still feels very incremental and not disruptive to me, like battery technology. Yeah, it gets a little bit better every year, but like fusion energy, that's like, you know, jetpack transition. We actually had unlimited energy that didn't produce waste. Okay, that would be disruptive. So I'm more interested in transitions like that fusion looks like they got to plus one, than I am with the progress or lack of progress in the metaverse, virtual reality, or even AI.
Yeah, it's a great point you brought up that we're already in the metaverse, but maybe we're just in the dial-up days, right? The 90s.
We're in the dial-up days of the metaverse.
Greg, always great chatting with you, and I got to have you back on because, you know, things are moving fast and your perspectives are great. Thank you for joining me.
Alrighty, thank you.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry,
sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.